Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story Is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Yeah, off to India this time.
Yes, a different world.
Right. Monsoon Wedding is the subject, and this is episode 161. This is a movie from 2001, directed by Meera Nair.
I
did not look up. I should have looked up her pronunciation, but
is that how I say that?
I don't know if it's Nair or...
I also don't know. And you'd think I would, because we really love her in our household.
No, that's great. So you more than this movie?
Yes. And I'm looking and I don't see a pronunciation, so we're just going with this.
Okay.
This is the movie where we first encountered her. And I must have watched this about 8 times, honestly, because when we'd have friends come over, it's one of those like The Castle or Lars and the Real Girl, where eventually we're watching this. And then she also did a movie called The Namesake, which is essentially, it's from a novel, but it's essentially looking at what happens to a couple, an Indian couple in America after the arranged wedding. How is the wife living? What's it like for their son who's grown up? So it's told kind of in flashbacks and from the son's point of view. And that's really good. And then there's another movie she did called The Queen of Katwe. And that, I think, was produced by Disney. And it's more of a family-oriented movie because it's about the true story of a young girl from an African city that maybe Uganda, in somewhere in Uganda, who turns out to be a natural chess champion. But she's grown up in the slums. So it's about her journey. Huh. And the thing is that when you have somebody like Meera Nair at the helm of a movie like that, it's just a richer, deeper experience than your average family movie about a kid who's a chess champion. It's just, it's really good. For that sort of a movie, I recommend it to anyone. Hmm. It's really great.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this being my only exposure to her, and I'm definitely going to check out these other ones because I thought it was terrific. Really, really good movie.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And I'm surprising a little bit because, you know, I don't know what you call it. When you have scenes with a whole bunch of people in them, like at a wedding or something like that, you know, it reminds you of stuff in the past, like, you know, The Godfather, there was a big wedding. And, you know, Christopher Columbus's movies, which are usually very poor at that, but are always like just full of people just talking. Oh. You know what I mean? But this one... You know, sometimes those scenes can be grating, is my point. But this was not at all. There was, it was like you were there. I mean, I felt really a part of the family practically by the end of this. I mean, I was so vested that, I was a little emotional at the end. It was, there's just something about it. I loved all these people a great deal.
Yeah, somehow she does such a good, subtle job of just thrusting you into the heart of this family as they begin to gather, both sides of the family, for this arranged wedding or marriage in the middle-class Indian families. And so you're seeing it from the bride-to-be's point of view and her cousin's point of view and her father's point of view. And there are various other characters who you get to know really well, such as the wedding planner, P.K. Dubay, or Dubai, I can't remember how you say it. And it's bewildering a little at first, but like it's kind of like you were invited to the wedding. So when you're thrust into the heart of it, you know a couple of people well, and you learn to recognize everyone else. And like you say, I was watching this going, yeah, when they're having the thing where they're putting the henna on her hands, you're recognizing the main women out of this huge group at the wedding ceremony and all these different times. You're just glimpsing people you know in the midst of all these other people who are other guests. And it is like you know these people. It's like you're one of the group.
It's almost like you're encountering them almost as you do in life. Mm-hmm. You know, at these events where you're just meeting them for just a really short period of time. You know, and then over time, you add up these little periods of time. And somehow she's just built an incredible, deep story out of it. Mm-hmm. But really, I imagine if we added up how long each one of these characters was the main focus of the story, it would not be very long. But yet, I felt very deep. I felt it was kind of far-reaching. It was epic in a way, you know, yet it was about a family, you know, so it wasn't about just one person. It was about everybody.
Really well done. Oh, I'm so glad. Well, and I was just thinking about how she'll shift the focus. Like at the beginning, the focus is more on the bride because she has a problem, a secret that she's trying to deal with. And so you'll see her cousin Rhea, because that's kind of her confidant. But later, as the focus starts to shift to Rhea, as the bride's problem starts to become resolved, but they overlap. And so it's a very natural way of seeing it. The focus isn't always just on one person. We're getting a lot of different points of view. Maybe that's what makes it feel so natural.
Maybe so. Yeah, that's a good point. You know, because, yeah, like you say, as this person sort of, you know, it's like waves on an ocean, I guess. You know, as this person mm-hmm. sort of comes up to the forefront, then someone else rises. Mm-hmm. And then and the overlapping makes it feel really natural. You know, I think when you say that, it makes sense because you'll see like PK Dubé in the background running around or something like that. And then the next scene will be him, you know. So there's a lot of things going on in the background of this movie.
Well, and when I think about him, he's a good example because we don't see anybody too deep from the beginning. We're allowed to learn about them very slowly because the movie opens with the father of the family just chewing him out because the ceremony, the bridal spot is in this tent that's being erected in their yard. And he's like, it's falling over. It's not ready. The wedding is in a few days. What's going on? And you see PK Dubé on his phone going, oh yeah, I'm stuck in traffic. And of course he's not. Yeah. And then hanging up the phone and complaining to his workers about these people, they don't understand anything. And so you're not getting a flattering point of view of either one of them. But as you go on, you understand the father has money trouble trying to pay for the wedding. And then he also is already in sorrow a little bit over his daughter leaving. She's going to go live in America. And he also is worried about his son and and he's not as close as he could be to his wife right now. And so you start to see all his problems and he becomes this warm, loving character who you care about. And PK Dubé is the same way. Mm-hmm. He is just kind of a joke and very annoying at the beginning. And as you see his interest in Alice, the little household maid, start to grow and he kind of opens his heart and you see it reflected a little bit in the workers who understand him. And they go from teasing him to kind of caring about how he feels. It's like a natural friendship unfolding.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point too.
You love him by the end.
Yeah, because that character could very well have stayed what he was as comic relief throughout the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as we spend more and more time with him, you know, like you said, he changes. Because, it's kind of a lesson in the fact that you don't know what's on people's minds. You don't know in life what the motivation is for people to act the way that they act. Sometimes there are very valid reasons for them to have offended you at some particular moment that you just are not privy to.
Yeah, and that's a good point because in his story, by the way, everyone, we're just jumping right in, obviously. So watch this movie. And I don't think it matters if you know what happens, but you'll just enjoy it more if you let it unfold for you. It's just so wonderful.
It really is. Yeah.
But they show us, or, you know, Mira Nair shows us not only him at work and encountering Alice, But we see that he wants to be at the forefront of things. He wants to be a mover and shaker. He's trying to improve himself. However little we approve of his method or mood or tone. And when you see him going home after he's discouraged because of the incident with Alice and the looking through the window and everything, and there's his mother, and he's living in a little two-room place, it looks like, where there it might not be a slum, but it's not very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And his mother is, you know, also she wants to improve their lot too. Oh, these stocks went up. I told you they would. Go ahead and buy them or sell them tomorrow. And then she stops and goes, what's even the point? I don't have any grandchildren. You don't have a wife. And she's longing for family. And he's just so dejected. And he sits and looks out over the city from that rooftop, from his plastic chair. And you see this mishmash that is, you know, the beautiful, it looks like a temple silhouette. And the kites flying. All these people are flying kites out there over the city. But at the same time, there's the smog and the phone lines and the ugly buildings. And it's like the mixture of what she's showing us. She's showing us not only this family struggling with change, but through them, old and new India at the same time, too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was a really affecting scene when he went home.
Mm-hmm.
That was something else, you know. And she even said that he made more money. Or no, was it his brother who made more money than he did?
I think it was somebody else, because she said his mother's always bragging about the grandchildren.
Right, right.
So it's a friend of hers' son.
Yeah, yeah. So he's, yeah. But the total dejection, you know, man, it was just well done. Actor was good too. I enjoyed him a lot.
He was really great. I loved him.
Yeah. And Alice, you know, I don't know enough about Indian culture. I do know about the caste system, but I noticed that Alice was wearing a rosary around her neck. So I was assuming she was a Christian, but I guess I'm not positive. But she was obviously like from a lower class. Is that correct?
Yeah. And I do know that I saw somewhere where it said when she says where she's from, it's the very, very poorest region of India.
Okay.
And I thought it was funny, and people commented on this. Her name is Alice, but she's the only one who can't speak any English at all. Most of them are speaking a combination of English and, I guess, Hindu.
Yeah, which was very interesting. Is that, I wonder if that's how they do it, or was that for the movie?
Oh, no,
I think with subtitles.
Well, they put subtitles on for the Hindi. And at the beginning, yes, I would advise it, because your ear has to get acclimated to the way they speak English. But, well, don't you have people who speak Spanglish?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. It's like Spanglish, I think.
Gotcha.
I remember getting my hair cut one time, and both my hairdresser and the one who was doing somebody next to me were both having this conversation, and I could follow it totally because it was in Spanglish, and I knew just enough Spanish.
Mm.
So
yeah.
I think that's just how they do it.
Right.
But Alice, I just also assumed she was Christian because of that.
Yeah, not because of anything else she did, but just because she was wearing that. And then, you know, just showing her longing to be part of what, you know, she was like a servant in this household. Mm-hmm. And just her wanting to be a part of it. You know, she was there, but separate, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, wanting to be part of it. And that just felt like, you know, she was like, I wish I was born in a better situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they weren't unkind to her ever,
not at
but
all.
She was
yeah.
just a household servant, and they were having a big family party. They didn't have time to stop and go, come on, Alice. I mean, they needed things done, and that's what she was there for to do.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why, you know, it was moving at the end. That was part of, part of why it was moving.
Yes.
But we'll get to that.
Yes.
So, but yeah, so you have that story, but that's, you know, again, that's, you know, not the main story.
No.
I guess you would say that the main story is the wedding between, Pimmy?
Mm-hmm. No, Pimmy isn't that the wife?
Is it the wife? Okay.
Aditi.
Aditi, right. Okay, Aditi and her husband. And I'm looking at a list.
Can't remember. The problem is everybody's name is very difficult. And I tried to write them down. Hemant, if that's how you say it. They don't say it very often.
Oh, Hemant. Okay.
Aditi and Hemant.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
And Hemant, he is. I thought that was so funny. He's like, when we go back to Houston, I hope you won't be too lonely. And I'm like, oh, right. He's working in tech in America, yeah. Which happens to a lot of people. And the funny thing is that this, in terms of authenticity, just for a second, let me diverge. I have a friend whose daughter married a guy from a traditional Indian family, just like this, very well off. They had set up, I think it was 12 or 14 times, they had tried to get him to have an arranged wedding. And he'd always gone as far as, you know, meeting the person and having whatever preliminary things, but they just never clicked. And he'd lived in America for a long time. And he's like, you know what? And then he met my friend's daughter and said, oh my gosh, I'm in love. And they're like, wait, you're marrying who? And he said, look, I have tried it your way. But what happened was they had the wedding back in India, and my friend went, and her other daughter and everybody, and they bought them saris, and they sent them all over to look at amazing Indian monuments and forests and all these things. And I was asking her, had she seen this wedding? And she said, yes, the family had recommended it to her to help acclimate her to how things would go. And I said, so the wedding at the end, she goes, it was just like that.
Oh, wow.
And she said the other movie that her future son-in-law had recommended was The Namesake, which is the other movie I mentioned afterward. Right. And they said that's very true to the Indian experience. So
that's great. Yeah. Well done. Well done, Meera Nair.
So the main focus begins at least with the bride and the fact that she's going to go through with this arranged marriage, and she doesn't seem to be opposed to it at all because her boyfriend or ex-boyfriend is a married man. But she's having trouble breaking it off with him because she, you know, is still attached to him.
Mm-hmm.
So it shows that, which is, of course, sordid. They don't show any details, really. And something to keep in mind is that for a really long time, people have not been allowed to kiss in Indian movies, real Indian movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm. So, you know, the fact that when somebody, you know, there's one sequence where people are kissing in this and they're set apart from everyone else. But, you know, that would be the height of sensuality for the movie.
Really? Wow. Okay. Was this movie made for an Indian audience?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I thought it was made.
Yeah. But I know that she said she wanted to make a Bollywood movie her way, and a Bollywood movie is it's really I have never been able to watch. Oh, well, there's one movie that I guess could be called Bollywood that I've watched, which is called Lagaan, L-A-G-A-A-N.
Mm-hmm.
It is the greatest movie, but it is 4 hours long. So we got to the end of the disc. It was 2 hours, and we didn't know this, my husband and I, when we were watching. This was years ago. And we went, oh, and then it went intermission, and we went, what? Wait. We look at the back of the box and go, oh, my gosh. Well, okay, it's early enough. Let's go for broke.
Mm-hmm.
And we really enjoyed it a lot. And it's the story during colonial times of this Indian village dealing with the nearby British outpost. And the thing about a Bollywood movie, though, is they're very stylized in a lot of ways. And so there are certain times when everybody will suddenly stop what they're doing and break into song and dance.
Hmm.
And it's very formalized. And I would say the best example that is easy for Americans to understand is it's this light bit of fluff called Pride and Prejudice. Mm-hmm. It's a different Indian woman's director, and I can't remember her name right now. And it's her take on Pride and Prejudice, Indian style. It's very light, very entertaining, and it's much more formally in Bollywood style. And it kind of fits in with the idea of Pride and Prejudice, where, you know, there's a big dance everyone goes to and things are revealed. So this very stylized dance allows for that.
Huh.
That kind of thing. But they'll just be going down the street and everybody in the street will suddenly become part of the dance ensemble as they all sing this big song.
Are you saying that that does not happen to you on a regular basis?
I live a very sad life. I know in Utah it's different.
Walking to work, yeah. Oh my gosh.
So we tried watching an actual real one that now Lagan was made for Indian audiences, but we tried watching one that was like hardcore Indian and we could not follow it. It was zipping around plot wise from person to person. Also, there was a problem with the captions where they were going just as fast as the people were talking. I never realized what an art of the caption there is. Put it up a little ahead and leave it a little behind. Give the people time to read. And then things were happening like suddenly they're not in the room where they started singing anymore. They're in the middle of this field where all the field workers have dropped their implements and are singing and dancing. And now, oh, top of a tree. We're all on the top of a tree singing and dancing. And I'm just like, as much as you can. And we just went, we've heard of this. Oh, but man. We haven't been educated. We don't know how to follow this. So we had to quit watching.
Yeah, wild.
So Miranir kind of took that style and made it more natural.
Yeah.
So you still have your set piece. They're not really set pieces. It's very natural kind of singing and dancing. Like when they're practicing for the other cousin and the brother. Dance that they're going to do at the big party that night, or where the women are they're henna-ing, putting henna pattern on the bride's hands, as is traditional, and they have a song that they're all singing, a call and response kind of thing.
Yeah.
So those kind of things there are songs in, or the family, like when they're all getting together for the first time, and somebody starts singing this traditional song, and they're all kind of singing and thumping on the table. But it happens so naturally, it doesn't seem weird.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it didn't feel like a musical to me. Right. Yeah, not at all. Yeah, the arranged marriage aspect of this was very interesting to me. You know, it's in direct contrast with American culture, which has gone completely the other way. It's like,
right.
You know, now we need to meet each other. We need to date for a certain amount of time. We need to live together. We need to do all of this before we can get married. You know, it's the complete opposite, you know. And then this is, you know, he had some things to say about it that were interesting. You know, he says, hey, this is no different than if we met at a bar or whatever.
Yeah.
But it was just an interesting, you know, positive look at it, really. You know, it left me thinking.
Yeah, because you're trusting the families to know you and try to do what's best for you.
Yeah, and most of the arranged marriage things that you see or that I've seen have been negative where, you know, hey, they're forcing you to marry. You're not marrying for love whatsoever. And then you've got a very cold situation.
Well, and it makes me think about, you know, and we just naturally assume that it's much better to do it our way. And of course, I'm not saying it isn't, but I'm suddenly thinking about the divorce rate in this country.
Absolutely.
So are we doing any better job? I mean, are people just as unhappy with both methods? Or I thought I'd heard that maybe people are better or enjoy the arranged marriage idea more. Gosh, what's that documentary? Meet the Patels?
Okay, I've heard that title. That's a documentary? Yes. Okay.
It's totally delightful. And it's about an American Indian family. I mean, you know, Indian parents who were immigrants and their kids who are now grown and thoroughly acclimated. They're just Americans. And they want their kids to get married. And so they keep trying to set stuff up. And the kids are really torn between, do I do it the American way? Do I do it the Indian way? And they're trying as hard as they can. And so what this is, and it's a light look at it. It's not at all anguished or anything like this. And so basically the brother, the son of the family says, you know what? I've tried it the American way. I'm not getting anywhere. I'm going to make my parents happy. I'm going to see if they can find someone for me. And so his sister, who has a camera, she starts documenting it. And so he does all kinds of things for them, you know, and because they're like, oh, of course, we will, you know, we'll pay for any airfare for you to meet whoever you might want to meet. Like, because there are online Indian arrangement things, there are meetings that they'll have, conventions in America. They'll have things where he goes back to his parents' native village to meet people. And it's not like, who's that Morgan Spurlock who'll do the supersize me, where he's kind of taking it and plunging in as an experiment. This is his life. He's trying to really do this and make his parents happy and make himself happy because he wants to have a life and a family and all this stuff. Yeah. And also, though, they intersperse it with all these Indian people who have gotten married, who are Americans. And, you know, it's them with arranged marriages. It's them with not arranged marriages. It's old. It's young. Talking about their experience of it. Hmm. You know, and the spouses may or may not be Indian.
Yeah.
So it's really a fun look at that whole idea. And I think, though, I came away from it going, there's no one way that's better than another. We're all out there just looking.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a fun one if people want to follow up. Just while thinking about the topic, because it's light, it's entertaining, as I said. But at the end, you know, you love this family. You're kind of in love with the parents by the time you're done.
Oh, cool.
Kind of the way I was.
Like this one, yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of like this one.
So, yeah, what you see in this is the father especially. You know, you're not shown the mother as in depth. But the father, especially at one point early on, he's watching his daughter sleeping because they have so many people there. They're just sleeping all over the living room and everywhere. And he's looking at his daughter saying, you know, I would give anything to make sure they had a happy life. I love them so much. My family is everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And he is given everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was a scene on the golf course where he was asking for money. You know, you could just tell that was killing him.
Mm-hmm.
But he had to do it. You know, he was overridden.
His only daughter.
Yeah. And then later on, he was overrode tradition for the same reasons, right? You know, so clearly the family was the most important thing to him. The reason for everything he did.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I'm sorry, I've dragged us a couple times away from you talking about the movie. So.
No, it's just Bollywood terrific. It's just so terrific. Forth. Yeah. So, Aditi. You know, I felt that what she thought she was in love with this guy, you know, this other guy, right? But it ended up just being a lust thing,
yes. Right?
Because it was not returned. He was just, lusting after her. And then, you know, so many American comedies, you know, that's going to be kept a secret. And then, I mean, not even a comedy, but a dramatic, you know, they're going to keep that a secret. But so it was very, very... I don't know, enlightening or I just felt inspired by that, you know, that she's going to go ahead and tell this guy, you know, hey, I want us to have an open book before we do this.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to know this, even though it's completely over and I could just keep this a secret. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you.
Which is what her cousin Rhea says.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to know this. And she says,
which is interesting coming from Rhea, because she had a big secret herself, right?
Right.
And I think she convinced herself later. So, but that's a really good, interesting point.
Well, it's kind of interesting because when Rhea reveals her secret, which is wonderfully and beautifully slowly revealed, by the time she reveals it, we know it.
Yeah, we do know.
We're also as anxious as Rhea is over what she sees developing in one part of the family. And in the case of Aditi, she reveals all the truth because she wants to give love a chance. And without truth, you can't have love. And she wants to protect this guy in a sense.
Yeah.
She's doing it for him. And when Rhea reveals her secret, which she'd essentially, I feel like she'd been keeping it out of love for the bigger family and for the father figure.
I think so too.
And also because it's a shameful, I mean, not from her point of view, but it's, you know, abuse. She was abused. And when she was a kid, and that's the kind of thing it induces a lot of shame. And of course you're not revealing it to anybody. But, when she does reveal that secret, she does it for love of someone else who she's protecting.
Mm. Right. Right. And that her story is really interesting too. I was mesmerized by her. She, you know, throughout the whole thing, you know, when that guy Tej shows up, the abuser, and he's apparently, given the family a lot of money or something. I was trying to understand exactly what their relationship was.
I think
he's an uncle or something.
Yeah, his family, I think he was like an honorary uncle. And when they said during, after the partition,
mm-hmm.
so that would be when Pakistan, I guess, broke off.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Maybe, see, I'm bad at this, so never mind that. But
yeah,
anyway,
yeah.
he said their family came in and they didn't have any money. And this family helped them and got them set up and put them on the road to their prosperity. So this guy is part of that family and he's always been kind of a benefactor to it.
Right. And
so he calls,
Lalit, who's the father of the family that we're talking about, he feels great responsibility to this man and his family.
And respect and love.
Respect
at one point,
love,
he says,
yeah.
"My brother," when he's very happy about something, and he's giving him hugs. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, it's just so poignant. You know, looking back, when Ted says, "Yeah, I'm going to pay for her to come over to the United States," and you know, this magnanimous thing, but you knew that she had trouble with it.
Right.
Rhea had trouble
with it. She was very
guarded. She was just like, "Oh man," you know. But that guy, man.
But she never says anything. That's interesting, too.
Anything,
it's all done with attitude and glances
right.
and, you know, kind
and
of body language.
At that
language.
Point, I knew what had happened.
Right. We all knew.
Yeah. So, but you're right. I loved how she told that story, the director, how mm-hmm. she told that whole story. Yeah. You knew just from the look on her face what had been going on. I guess you didn't know to what extent it was or
right.
anything like that. There were details, but the shell of what happened, you know, you could tell.
Yeah. And like you say, when we watched after it's all come out and that was the worst scene when she's standing there at the car.
Yeah.
Going, it wasn't enough that you did this to me. And then she starts talking about what he did and the wife slaps her, but the wife is standing there later looking at her husband and she knows.
Yeah.
You could tell she knows. The secrets that are kept.
Mm.
And that's kind of a very minor, it's not hammered a lot, but you know, the truth is always better if you can bring yourself to tell it. But there are all kinds of reasons why you don't.
Yeah, yeah. And especially in that culture, it seems, right?
Oh, yeah.
You're doing a lot of things internally for the good of the family. A lot of things are being unsaid, right?
Well, think of the look on Rhea's face when the father finally can't. He's been wrestling with this, and he loves her like his own daughter, and it's his brother who died, I assume, because she has the same last name.
Yeah.
And he just, he's like, nope, you cannot come in here and honor my brother.
That was fantastic. Because... I don't know. I mean, that everybody knew, you know, so everybody knew at this point. And then having that guy there was just like cancer. It was just horrible. You know, just everybody, you know, even taking a family photo. That was amazing.
And her having to sit at his feet.
Oh, boy. Yeah. And then to have him say that was just like, holy cow.
Well, and the
it's
look on her
like,
face,
yes.
You can see what a break with. Everything that was that she never expected, it came out of the blue. She was just dumbstruck.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And when he went to get her, I loved that too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't leave us. Please don't leave us, you know. That was something.
If you leave, we can't have the wedding. Everything will be broken.
Right, right.
Yeah. I know, that was beautiful. And it showed her trust in him. She went back.
She did, yep. Yep, she loved them back.
Mm-hmm.
So cool. So so all these stories just all happening at the same time.
Yes. And, you know, and each of them has those little bits, of course, at different points, but that show kind of here's the end to their story. So with the two, the bridal couple, we see them more, but theirs is when he takes her up on the roof.
Yeah.
Because she has bared her soul to him and told him this and shared it and been honest. It's made this new bond between them so that they're both excited about this. They can't wait to be married.
Yeah.
And, you know, the father, he of course gives up tradition and this long bond, as you say, for the good of his family, who he loves more than anything. And then we have PK Dubai with his, he goes back and for his both apology and proposal. He has, you know, the ring of candles and the marigold structure he's made and the heart of marigolds that he holds out to her, and he's kneeling outside her door, and it's so beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. That was good stuff. I tell you what, that was good stuff. Yeah. I loved all the scenes he was in. He and her both, you know, that was just excellent. She was neat.
Yeah. And what you don't notice until you've watched it a few times is she's not just being pursued. When she's like, would you like me to fill your water bottle?
Mm-hmm.
And he's not even paying any attention.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, sure, fine.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's just a servant. She goes, oh, do you want fridge water or tap water? And he suddenly turns around and notices her.
Hmm.
Oh, fridge water, thank you. And then his coworker starts singing the song about my eyes met yours, you know.
Yeah, that's too good.
But she gets his attention specifically.
Right, right. And you knew that she felt for him back when he gave her his card.
Yes.
Yeah, and it, when he left, she looked at it again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really well done.
Yeah.
Really well done. And then, yeah, that scene where she was just trying that stuff on. And like I said, the workers also, very cool. You know, you mentioned this already, but the workers realizing that he's lovesick, right?
Yeah.
Taking it upon them that when they were apologizing to her as she was walking by, and there's those three workers are like, we're sorry, it won't ever happen again. We're sorry, you know. That was pretty cool.
We were wrong. And they don't even say give him another chance. They just assume that she's going to know.
Yeah.
They're just apologizing for themselves, you know.
I love that. I loved it. I thought it was great.
Well, because I was surprised because he's watching her as she's trying on these things. And he's just taken with her. You know, he's falling more in love with her. And it is a sweet little picture. And, but the workers, I was surprised because you thought that they might give catcalls or something. Instead, they're super honest. They're like, she's stealing
that
hey,
stuff.
Thief. So people react in ways I didn't expect.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So good. So good.
I also really enjoyed, this is kind of a love letter in a minor way to Delhi, which is the city it's in, where as kind of scene transitions in a way, they'll kind of break away and show this montage of people in the streets or I guess it was mostly people in the streets, but in different locations, walking places. And once it rains, how everybody's, you know, either just in the rain or scurrying.
Yeah, that was something. Yeah, it was just like, hey, when it rains, it rains.
Yeah.
It seemed not to change whatsoever.
Yeah. But there were no people from the movie in it. It was just, oh, and here's what's going on in the city around, you know, every so often.
Right. And Dubé said, I promise you it will not rain.
Yeah.
But the father said, hey, waterproof this tent.
Yeah.
You know, like a good father would.
Mm-hmm.
And lucky they did.
Good thing he did.
He pulls
him in and says, great waterproofing, Dubé. And Dubé looks at him and then they hug each other. He hugs him, you know. Because at that point, all the worries are gone. You're in the moment.
Yeah, and I did love that scene, how the family just pulled that couple right in with them.
Yeah.
And we're celebrating them as well. That was cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you have the parallels there at that point of the very poor wedding on the little bridge with just the three workers, and then the great big fancy traditional wedding.
Yeah. Yeah, that lasted for days. How many days does an Indian wedding last? My gosh.
Going and going. Yeah, see, I don't know. Oh, and then there's a couple that I love, and you don't see them much. They're just kind of around the edges, and they're almost comic relief, but they're not quite. And it's the mother's sister and her husband.
Yeah.
And the husband is kind of comical. He's got the mustache, and he's out there going, all right, everybody, here's this poem I wrote, you know. And someone goes, who is that buffoon? And this young, handsome guy goes, oh, that's my father. And but as if you watch it a few times, or maybe you already felt this way, I grow to love them because they obviously are such a great couple. They enjoy each other's company so much. They love life. And they keep saying the whole time, this other son of ours, he keeps getting delayed, but Rhea, you would love him. He's so great. And then, of course, at the end, this impossibly good-looking guy shows up, and it's the son, and Rhea looks over and goes, oh. You're just like, yes, I could see this happening.
Too funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was good stuff. But yeah, I agree with you. I did enjoy that couple too, you know, now that I think about it. But yeah, he's, you know, the first time we see him, he's getting dressed and spraying stuff all over himself and wearing a suit. And that little girl is in there. Yeah. So
what does this word mean?
Yeah.
Uxorious.
Uxorious, yep.
And he's that's making right. up a definition.
That's right. He says, I don't think that's a word.
I don't think that can be a word. Well, it's in this book.
They left the L off of that thing.
Yeah.
Too good.
But this, I love this movie. The themes it has are just so universal and human. Yeah. If you have any kind of a family, you know some of these people and these dynamics. And everybody in the movie who we get to see in depth is struggling with how to best love each other, really, essentially. How do you communicate that, and how do you love each other through everyday life? It's, you know, the father's worries over the son, the mother babying the son too much, the fact that the mother and father seem to be a bit distant from each other in an intimate way, other than just you know, the surface worries of life. And you know, you get older and you're married and you do go through those struggles.
That's a really good point to look at it that way. I agree with that very much. And even with the uncle that he tossed out, you know, you'd think, you know, this Christian thing we have where we're supposed to love our enemies, you know, where it, man, that would be hard. You know, what do you do? What do you do? And I felt so, so much for him. And of course, Rhea.
You're
just like, my gosh, you know, and he's just like in his mind trying to figure out, well, what's the most important thing here? And, you know, he's just frozen. He said he didn't know what to do. And then it just became clear to him, you know, this is what I have to do. Mm-hmm. And it was the right choice.
When he said, I would protect these children even from myself if I had to.
Right, right.
And that's how close he felt to that guy.
Right.
And that's how deeply that betrayal thrust a knife into his heart, too.
Yeah.
No wonder he was frozen. His whole world had been ripped out from under him. The solid ground he thought he knew was gone.
Mm. Yeah.
So what is the solid ground that you have to find? And you have to kind of have a moment of, or some time of readjustment to figure it out. But he's in the middle of this situation. He's got to handle it.
Yeah. Yeah.
He doesn't have time to go and, how do I feel?
And he did, which was just great. Yeah, he didn't just ignore it.
Yeah, you protect the innocent.
Yeah.
At all costs.
Mm.
Maybe you reconcile with this guy if he can show enough later that he's sorry, that he's done something to try to change, that he's repented.
Yeah.
But you never can trust him in that situation again.
True.
That's not being unloving. Because it's not good for that guy to be like that. And it's not good for his wife that he's like that.
Yeah.
You have to be able to face the truth. And that's something that Christianity demands that I don't think people give enough credit to. It's always looked at as, oh, you're always talking about your sins and what you've done wrong and, you know, being mean to each other over it. And, you know, but you know what? If you don't know who you are and what's true about yourself, good and bad, how can you ever become the person you should be?
Well, yeah. I mean, you can look at this whole movie in that light, too. I mean, there were two major confessions in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
One where the bride-to-be told her groom-to-be what she had been doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one was Rhea, right? Rhea's confession. And they both were painful, and they both led to good.
They both were healing.
They both were healing, right. So at the end, the joy and everything of the wedding was honest.
Yes.
And prevalent, right?
Yeah.
But it wouldn't have been. It would have been subdued. It would have been, you know, there's something under the surface here that we can't all deal with, you know, because it isn't said.
That's what confession is. Yeah, it hadn't occurred to me to think about that until now. What would that wedding have been like if Rhea had not said anything? She would have still been keeping an eye on the uncle, full of suspicion every time he was near that little girl, who would have been in danger the whole time.
Yeah.
And the bride would have had her secret.
Yeah.
And as it was, her sharing the secret led to a closeness between them at that early point she couldn't have predicted. And Rhea was set free. She knew she was truly one in the heart of that family. She mourns her father, but she doesn't have to mourn him as much.
Yeah.
For the other reasons.
Right. And I think that's the thing between, our relationship with God, but also our relationship with each other. You know, when you have the clarity of nothing between you that's unsaid or hidden or secret, that's when things can get better, right?
Right.
Same with God.
Yeah. And God, of course, knows everything already. It's about your relationship with him. When you're sharing this stuff with God, he was there when it happened. He gets it.
Yeah.
He's just waiting to kind of help you work through it and make it better. But with people, everybody doesn't have to know every secret, but the people involved have to.
Yeah.
You know, that bride and groom never have to share that secret with anyone, but the people involved know.
And it never has to be between them, I guess, is what I'm saying. Yeah.
Right.
It's out there. So, yeah, there's never going to be that moment where that has to be revealed again.
Well, and he did his best to be open with her. He says, you know what? I had a relationship I broke up from a while back. It was hard. I do understand how confusing and painful it is.
Yeah.
So he was extending as best he could, without having been in that situation, his understanding of, I'm here for you.
Yeah.
And which was all the more powerful after his outburst of, hey, back in America, this is great. Meet my wife. She was screwing around with a married guy, but it's America. We'll fit right in. You know, it's like, oh, yep.
Oh, boy. Heck yeah. Yeah. Wow. Incredible.
But also, none of us is perfect. We all try as hard as we can. Some of us have things that are bigger than others, but we're all out there trying our best, usually.
Mm-hmm.
Not the uncle, but maybe now that his secret is revealed, maybe he can.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe he's shaken now, and maybe he will.
Yeah, you can't tell because his face, you know, he's been outcast.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and if he hadn't have been kicked out of the wedding, too, he may not have had what he needed to change.
Right.
He's like, well, you know, I'm still accepted, so.
I can still pretend to most people that nothing happened.
Right, right.
Well, you know, that's interesting, too, because it makes me think he was outcast or cast out. So then you think of the Garden of Eden.
Mm.
And it's always, it's often looked at as, you know, very harsh.
Yeah.
You did this thing, but what they did was they broke trust.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the uncle did. How can you understand what you've done if you don't understand the consequences of your actions?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's interesting. Yep. Good thought. Mm-hmm. Good point.
Hmm.
Yep. But overall, you know, we're talking about sin and stuff here, but overall, this movie is joyous. You know, this movie, yes, if I was going to pick a word, it was just joyous. I really was caught up in it.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Yeah. Yeah. All these people. But yeah, like I said at the beginning, there's just a depth of character to this movie that is surprising. And, I really felt strongly for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Which is especially surprising because, you know, there was so much going on and so little time spent with each character, you know?
Yeah, and it's good to get your perspective on that because, as I say, I'm very familiar with the movie.
Mm.
So I have a lot of time to just relax in it whenever I see it and watch specific people or look at other stuff. And you coming to it fresh That's how I've always felt about the movie. It's just, you know, you feel like you're part of this family. You love them all by the time it's done.
Yeah. I love it. What was that? What was that? Ushpizin, I think. Isn't that what you... Yeah, that was the Jewish family?
Yeah. The Israeli couple, the Hebrew couple.
That's right. Uh-huh. That's right.
Yeah.
That was a great one, too.
Yeah, that's also one where you feel like you are part of that family by the time you're done.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, and, you know, and that's... I think a lot of these movies that are the ones that we find that people haven't heard of just because they're from a different culture and so and not very well publicized in this country. Like, think of Shower.
Oh, yep.
Or The Castle, even.
The Castle, yep.
Those are all movies about families.
Yeah, you're right.
Families where the success of the movie really depends on you learning to love the people, because otherwise it's just a situation you're looking at from the outside. So... when they've swept you into caring about the family, then you're invested. That's a good storyteller, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's, think of Jesus with the parables.
Right.
He would tell these parables about things that everybody could see all around them so they could understand and relate and feel like they were part of the story. And maybe the next time they're out plowing or sowing seeds or whatever, his words come to mind.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Jesus was good at those parables.
Yes.
But yeah, it's cool. I don't think I've really thought about that before, but you're right. By using the elements around him, then you're right. Somebody could be out plowing a field and that story would come to mind. And that's, because it was all oral, right? It was oral back then. So
nothing was written down. And most of those people couldn't read anyway.
I don't think I've thought of that before.
The Hebrews were more... educated the most because of the importance of the Torah.
Right.
But his stuff was all oral. No one was going around writing it down then anyway.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have a secretary behind him.
No secretary.
Wait, can you say that again, Lord? I couldn't. You had your turned away.
Oh, it reminds me of Life of Brian. What did he say?
Blessed are the cheesemakers. Well, really, anyone involved in the production of dairy products.
Oh, my gosh. That is so funny. Oh, shoot.
Oh, we've watched way too many movies. probably only mentioned 20.
I love it. That is too good. Too good. Well, wow.
I would say for anybody who's only seen Slumdog Millionaire, which is probably the most widely known movie that shows you a bit of Indian life, and although it was made by, you know, a British writer and director, star Dev Patel, who is, you know, essentially British, but I feel like that's actually fairly accurate in a lot of ways. But it's obviously a big movie. And I feel like this one takes you more into what is the Indian experience of life, you know, which is so much like ours. But of course, it's so different.
Yeah.
So that's part of what makes it fascinating is you see that stuff.
Yeah. And it's, you know, Ushpizin and this one, you know, we're all people.
Yes.
You know, different cultures, different traditions. But, you know, deep down.
Yeah.
We are people.
Yeah.
Exactly. We're all people.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I absolutely loved it. So thanks for picking it.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
Yeah. So anything else you'd like to say about it?
No. I guess I just touched on this earlier, and this isn't worth really dwelling on at great length, except to say that this family is also kind of going through that change from traditional to modern times. And a wedding, of course, brings it out. So when he goes out and says, "What kind of tent is this? This white tent, we're not in mourning. This isn't a funeral," reminding us that white is the color of mourning.
Yeah.
I think he says that, right?
He does, yeah.
And then he says, "I want a wedding tent." He goes, oh, fine. This is how they do it at the White House, but never mind. And he pulls out his cell phone, which would have been modern for the time, and says, "Oh, they don't want anything modern here. Get the old tent." You know, because he wants something traditional. And it's the same struggle you see in weddings now and how to blend all these new and old things, and like the English and Hindi and all the other stuff, all the cultural influences coming in. But still, what matters? The family.
Yeah.
Their relationship to each other. That never changes no matter what else is going on.
Right. It is the thing that ought to be focused on, right?
Right.
Yeah. It is the focus of it all. Everything else is details.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Cool.
For me.
Yep, but I love it. I love it. So,
so glad.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yep, another pool room movie. And my pool room is getting full.
Yeah, I'm going to have to build onto the pool room.
That's right. A wing. A wing onto the pool room.
Yes, exactly.
The guy from the island would love a wing.
Island?
Or, did I say the island? The, what was it? What's the name of the Australian castle. Movie again? The castle, right.
Oh, yeah, but yeah. It is like his little island. I get it.
What did I think of the island?
I don't know.
Yeah. That's a different movie.
Yes.
Yep.
I was going to say, I haven't seen that movie.
Yeah, you have. We did it. It's called Ostrov. It was a Russian movie. Yeah.
That. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I was thinking, I think there was a Japanese movie maybe called The Island.
Okay.
Or, kind of a dystopian or, I don't know.
Yeah.
People
yeah.
who hunt and or kill each other. I don't know. Maybe I'm making this up. Never mind. Move on. What's the next thing we're going to talk about? This podcast is too long.
Okay. This thing is.
My problems.
Oh, boy. Everybody needs to get ready for Flannery Cast 3000. We're going to talk about Flannery O'Connor again, which is fantastic. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, yep. The surreal and the real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll talk about three of her stories.
Yes, we haven't chosen them yet, but we will soon. So if you're interested in reading ahead, keep an eye on the sidebar. We'll have something there in a few days.
You bet, you bet.
I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Soon enough.
Yep, soon enough.
Okay.
Excellent. All right, well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thanks. Talk to you in a couple weeks.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.